So begins another Dr. Fred Bell's Science and Energy show, straight from the Pleiades. And as it says in the song, the Rishis came from the Pleiades 26,000 years ago. And of course they became known as the Brahmins and all different things and the Tibetans. And they were my teachers for many, many years. And the language came, of course, from nature, as the Pleiadian language is based in the sounds and phonics of nature. So is that of the Sanskrit. And that, of course, is a song called Heritage from the Fellowship album. I loved playing that thing live. I use a special synthesizer that has different sounds on it from the Far East, of course, including the sitar, one of my favorite, most complicated instruments to play. It's all in fun. So last week, we talked a lot about the nuclear receptor. And this week, let's talk about a few other things. And we're still doing a background check on me, Dr. Fred Bell. And so it'll be a while before we get up into the newer stuff, but there's a lot of old stuff to cover. And I know a lot of you have sent me some emails. Those of you that tried to call, don't worry about it. We did do the Art Bell show about a week ago, and we had about 14 million people out there trying to reach us at once. So takes a little bit of time, but leave your names on the answering machine. It's a special machine that we have monitored by Verizon, and we'll get back to everybody. It might be a month or so, but we eventually get all the calls reversed and spoken to everybody that's called. Today I want to talk about something that happened to me with Samyasian back in 1978. In those days we used to travel across the country in a motorhome. Paradigm was only, 78 would have made us a couple years old. And I used to have a lot of contacts. I had a driver of the motorhome, his name was Eric, that had been sort of cleared by Samyasi as being okay to be nearby when the ships came in for landings or whatever and communications. But of course Eric didn't get to see her, but he saw the ships lots of times. Well, in 1978, we were out on near Roswell, New Mexico, Sannyasi had, as I spoke to you last week about the pyramids right side up and the pyramids right side upside down, creating that field of the yin and yang in the body. And basically, for those of you that didn't hear it, if you test somebody, muscle test a pyramid right side up on the head, they'll test strong. If you reverse it, it goes upside down on the head, so the point is at the top of the head and the base is pointing in the air. You will muscle test weak, normally. That's because people don't handle the yin energy, female energy on this planet that's been mishandled for a long time by the male ego, and that's pretty much accountable in all our historical moments in time. The only one that really got their female energy together, really did some damage with it, was Cleopatra. A few other people tried, but didn't get too far. She got the farthest, having hung out with the Roman Empire. So anyway, she gave us a design of a device that's very popular now. It's called the irradiator. And to imagine what an irradiator looks like, when it sits on top of its companion device, which is called a megorb, it stands about 7 feet tall. A little under 7 feet. The radiator itself is about 5.5 feet tall. And it looks like a bunch of 9-inch size base pyramids put end to end, soldered together, fastened together with a kind of a wing, set of wings in the middle. It's like, almost imagine if you took a banana and stood a banana up, it looks sort of like that shape, only made out of pyramids, with in the middle of the banana a couple of wings with a couple of coils on them. And what it does, it's a scalar wave type device. I haven't posted the pictures yet up on the blog and service website. I think we're up to page 4 or 5 at this point. But I will post photographs of the scalar waves coming out of the irradiator, the trapezoidal waves. There's got several sets of really neat pictures of this. Some pictures taken with infrared film, as Sannyasi had told us to do in a laboratory, showing the energies coming from the scalar wave output, and also some what I would call etheric light pictures taken by another photographer that actually captures the light rays that come from the irradiators. The irradiators they're a pulsating device. They'll put out scalar wave energy depending on what the megorb, the device that they sit on underneath, is programmed to do. So they're basically transmitting antennas, although they do have an output of an energy field output, but with no modulation coming from the bottom of them where they modulate from. They just generate a static signal. It's like turning your radio on and listening to sound coming out of it, but there's no modulation of voices or anything. You just hear a constant sound coming out of your radio, waiting for modulation. That's pretty much the way the irradiators are. If you were to stand one up and look at it and rub your hands together in front of it and then open your hands up, palm, and face it with your palms, you'd feel like kind of a cool sensation coming off the wings, the wing part, the section that's in the middle that's kind of spread out like a set of wings. And that's the output of the yin and yang output, or the scalar wave modulated frequency. It's actually a life force frequency. All scalar waves are a life force. And so she gave us the design of this thing, and it was real interesting. I didn't quite understand what it was for, but she said, build it, and you'll figure it out soon enough. And I said, well, that's what she told me about the pyramids when we went to plating, and that's what she told me about the receptor. Actually, the receptor hadn't been really explained that much at this point, because it's still 1978. She'd mentioned it a little bit, but knowing Sannyasi, I got bits and pieces of what I was supposed to do, and curiosity drove me to do it, and then I got the answers. So we went ahead and got back to California, and we were on our way to East Coast and got back, and I built one of these things. And I noticed it had some kind of an output, and I noticed, obviously, there's right side up and upside down pyramids on it, so it had some kind of a neutral point. And being pre-receptor days, we didn't quite know. We knew that was a zero and null zone, as the Pleiadians always call it. When you get to understand the propulsion of their ships, there's a lot of things called null zones in them that make them work. But we're dealing with a radiator here. So I took it up to Northern California, and a guy that was very much like Uri Geller, his name was Dr. Lawrence Kennedy. He was a psychic spoon bender, and he taught psychic classes on metal bending up at Lake Tahoe, California. He set it up, and he used one of Vern Cameron's aura meters, which is a big weight on a spring on a handle, and when the energy is near this weight, it pushes it right or left or up or down, depending on which, you know, where the energy is going on a spring, and these dowsers use it for water and all kinds of different things. So he had one of those, and he says, Fred, let's see the range on this thing. I said, okay. So he stood it. We stood it up at his door, and we faced it out in the woods across the street from his house. And he stood in front of it and bent his little camera orometer backwards. And he says, "Well, it's got a very high output, this thing does." I said, "That, well, I guess so. See how wide the beam is on it." And so, because it looks like a radar antenna, banana-shaped one. Matter of fact, there's a picture of one on the, was it called ANFPS-8? I think it's on page 4 of the blog in service pictures. It's right below that great big 466-foot ANFPS-35 radar that I mentioned on the website. That's a smaller one, a little banana-shaped antenna, very similar looking to an irradiator. And by the way, the shapes on those radar dishes has to do with the polarization of the field of the output. And the same, you know, if it's a vertical antenna, it'll have a horizontal plane to it, which will be the way it works. If it's a horizontal antenna, it'll have a vertical element, and the vertical element is the scanning part of it. For example, if you look at that ANFPS-35 radar, it's got a great big wide banana, like turning a banana on its side. And that particular radar is for looking out over the ocean, 450 miles. But the beam is not shaped like that. The beam is a vertical, like a vertical wall. So if you imagine a vertical wall of energy coming off that antenna and propagating up and down, getting wider as it gets out, but staying very narrow, because it needs to be narrow to measure something, to get a reflection, to measure the distance. That's how that worked. The height sets, which the ANFPS-8 was, the banana-shaped ones, had a horizontal beam which scanned the air, and therefore you didn't want a narrow razor blade type beam going up. You wanted a wide flat beam going up and down, flapping up and down, like flapping your hand in front of you, holding a horizontal. And you could read airplanes and things. So the irradiator normally would have a very large horizontally polarized beam, which it does, but it also has a very large vertical beam. So, and you'll also notice that the horizontal component is much wider, meaning that it's a big, long, tall structure, making the horizontal component larger than the vertical, which is about 3 feet wide, a narrow structure. And so what you end up with is a trapezoidal-looking waveform because of that. It spreads it out very wide because it's horizontal. The horizontal element going out is a trapezoidal waveform. And you'll see pictures of it in my book, Rays of Truth, how it actually looks. And, of course, when you push this beam out, it comes to a conclusion. In other words, there's a point out there where the top pyramids and the bottom pyramids, the yin and yang frequencies meet, and then it reproduces itself again, producing another wave beyond that wave. And depending on the scalar wave itself, or depending on the width of those nodes and the width and the reproduction rate of the beam itself. So Lawrence went ahead and measured the beam right up close, and then he went across the road and began to measure how far it went. And he found the further he got away, the wider it got. And as he got across the road, he was several hundred feet, and the little dowsing rod would normally, if we were looking at, say, a pyramid that you would sleep under, after 3 or 4 feet of getting away from that, it would collapse, indicating that was the end of the field. Here he is across the street, and the field hasn't even begun to slow down. It's just as strong as ever, like it was at 2 feet, and he was blown away because all of our other devices, the pyramid hats that you wore on your head, the power domes, they had a field of output of 8 feet. The radomes had a field output of about 5 feet. The pyridome itself had an output field of about 3 feet. And I think the fire dome was 4 feet. Each one of these devices had a field of influence that was either a headgear that you wore or a pyramid that you slept under. And the furthest field out was 8 feet on a radome. And, of course, if you put a radome and a capstone on top of, a 10-foot pyramid, you get a little bit. Maybe you get a 15-foot field, which is fine for astral travel, but it's all it did. It was just limited. This thing was sending a beam across the road, and so he went for a quarter of a mile walk out in that, and he still got the same measurement. And by now, regardless of, if say he was a quarter of a mile straight away out from the center of it, if he walked to the east or walked to the west, he was still in the influence. He had to walk a long ways to get out of it because not only did it have a tremendous distance of intensity, but it also horizontally was spreading out, so the east and the west part of it, because we were facing it towards the west, was also spreading, so it was generating huge scalar waves. And the further away it went, the bigger they got. So this is exactly opposite of a radar set, which sends out radio frequency, RF energy, in the 375 to 425 megahertz range, which I talked about last week, which is human DNA frequencies. The further you get away from the radar, the weaker it gets. So this thing, it didn't matter. It was a constant velocity energy. So that was the beginning of it. Now we ask, what would it do? Well, it would do a lot of things. First thing we did is we found that we put different things underneath it. It would transmit that energy out. For example, if you set one of these things by your bed and aimed it at the bed and put a picture in it someplace, let's say a picture of somewhere you wanted to go in Hawaii. Well, as soon as you went to sleep and went into your astral body, which is usually after the 2 hours of sleep, or you're detoxing, usually your third hour of sleep, which is your astral sleep, rapid eye movement as it's known. If you went into that mode, you would dream about what was in the picture. It was great. You could dream about things by putting them in the radiator and placing them towards the pyramid, or if you didn't have one over your bed, just placing them at you. It seemed to work better if you were in a pyramid, because remember, in a pyramid, you're inside of a Faraday shield, and you're being protected from a lot of strange and outside interfering radiation. So obviously, sleeping in a pyramid is better. But anyway, we faced the radiator towards the pyramids and put pictures in them, and people would dream about them. This is the very beginning days. This is 1978. So then we found, if you put a book in there. So we placed a book, not several. And what people would do, these were students. We had a huge compilation of students that had graduated from his classes that were fairly clear high-level sensitives. So these were people that we were using more than just the average layperson that had no training, because we wanted some kind of a relatively accurate or some sort of a feedback based on someone that had some knowledge of what it was, and their ego wasn't going to get in the way, and they weren't going to be skeptical or critical. They were just going to be open. That's all we wanted. So then we found that with books and pictures inside the radiator, we began to put other objects in there, and you could become sensitive. For example, you could put a stone, a crystal, inside of it, quartz crystals, or an emerald, or any kind of a stone, and that would produce a different effect, a very intense effect. People would be affected, depending on their energies, by this particular stone. And remember, once again, if you look at the nuclear receptor as it is today, out in the bridge, that is a stone that then works with a different chakra or a different energy center in the body or level of consciousness to repair something that's probably damaged, and that's what this was doing while you slept. But this was like the receptor in the rough, but it had a lot of other capabilities. So then I don't remember exactly when, but at some point after we had done the initial research, Sumyasi came along and she suggested that I build a mega-orb, which is a device that goes underneath it. And she explained it. If you were to look at one of those, it looks like a series of octahedrons, actually four of them, with a pyramid above it, which captures the energy of the octahedrons, and the large device, the radiator, sits on top of the mega-orb. And in the mega-orb, we place natural stones from the environment, and that is for grounding. The reason for the natural stone placement in the bottom of the mega-orb is that there are nature spirits, and when you work with these kinds of energy, with minerals and energy fields, the nature spirits are affected by it. So you go outside your house and you get some local stones and you place them underneath the radiator inside the two of the chambers on the mega-orb. Then she said that in the scalar wave there, for the human body to be susceptible to it, you had to look at Akashic records. And Akashic records, of course, is stored in the mineral kingdom, primarily in the silicon dioxide quartz. And that's why these crystals grow. In other words, there's human events, and humans are always doing more, and we're expanding our field and energy, and we're reproducing, and we're making more of us, and we're doing more things every day. So that causes an expansion of energy. And the energy field in this case would be known in science, if they discover it's called a boson, or in the energy transformation process, it's called Higgs field transformation. you go into particle physics. But anyway, without getting that into that, basically, a crystal will grow at the rate of a tenth of its percent every 10 years. So, you know, you pull a crystal out of the ground, a quartz, it will grow at the rate of, you know, at that rate for 10 years. So we also, she had defined a crystal, a quartz crystal, as a perfect synthesis of spirit and matter in zero time. So repeating that, a perfect synthesis of spirit and matter in zero time. So Pleiadians have one, what I call one-liners to explain things. And so, therefore, she said, with all of that, put two large points, you know, like 3 or 4 inch long points, in the other two chambers of the Megor, so that you have the effect of the modulation frequencies of the Akashic records to be transmitted up the scale, there's a wire on the back of the pyramids on the radiators, and that will then transmit out the front. Whenever we build one of these systems, you'll notice when you see one of them that there's a big, long stainless steel wire coming down the back of the column of pyramids. And so the energy output is at the base, and what we've done with that wire, it's actually touching the tip or the point of each pyramid, and they're all wired together. So it stops the energy from leaving the top of the pyramid, which is now, of course, facing horizontally because the pyramid's on its side. And that wire then is brought down into the Megorb chamber, where it's physically wired into the Megorb chamber, and it picks up and is transmitted through the wire, the energies that we're talking about here, the modulation frequencies. And I've got photographs of that actually transformation actually taking place, and we will post those. So now we start looking at it. And then the next part, she said, now you have a modulation chamber. To take this a step further, she said, in the chamber above these four octahedrons, where we put a large 12-inch pyramid actually there, and which is the base of the irradiator already. Sometimes we use a 9-inch, but usually it's a 12-inch. In that chamber, she said, put a cluster. And I says, why a cluster? Why not another point? She says, no, the clusters are polarized the other way. And I said, yeah. They said, yeah, the points go up and down, versus horizontal and a flat point, like they're laying in a bottle. And she says, it also creates a lighter spreading energy. It's like a spreading of the Akashic and modulating frequencies. So she said, that's called the amplifier. And then she said, write down on a piece of paper what what your wishes were. Place those inside a sealed envelope and put them in the base of the irradiator. And you'll get something. You'll be very surprised with what happens next. So we did. We wrote messages down. She also cautioned us that, I guess this is a radionic device too, and it's also working on the homeopathic principles as radionic devices do. So therefore, if two people are programming in the radiator, for example, for something to happen or not to happen, or healing or whatever, even though the two people have the same goal and the same wish and the same ideas, they should never share the exact wording of their message, because everybody is individually different, and just the slightest conflict of the wording, let alone not the wishes, the ideals, or the standards, but the wording, just the conflict of the words would cause a big aberration in the end, and it would cancel the program. So everybody has to write down what they want and whatever the reason they want it to happen, whatever feels good to you, and you put it in there in a sealed envelope. And that was very interesting. I thought that was really neat. So that's how we started out with the radiators. Now, the next thing that happened was people started using them more and more. More and more they were using them for the self-help, pointing them at the pyramid. So we began to develop a whole product line along those lines. The self-help system, in the end, became a pyramid, capstone, orb, a laser. We would put a crystal inside the orb, which is on top of the capstone, which is on top of the pyramid, the sleeping pyramid, and we shoot a red laser into it. And we've done red and green lasers in combination, both in concert, but what we found out is that the red laser shooting into a pyramid while you're sleeping with an irradiator pointed at the face of your bed works quite well for men and women. What happened was when we added the green laser was too much for women. There's something with the female energy, they can't handle it, so the women can't sleep with the green laser on. Guys seem to like it. I know in sex, everybody, both of them like it, but when they're finished with the sex part of it, they want that green laser off. people aren't sleeping too good anymore. So anyway, we started working along these lines with the self-help systems. And then as we got further into it, we did another little number on the thing. We decided that if we increased the body's ability to absorb negative ions during a sleeping period especially, it probably would increase the intensity of the experience. So we designed a plastic plate to go underneath the megorb. And then we built a small power supply, which we now manufacture. And we connected the small DC Tesla modulated power supply to the bottom of the radiator. So now we had a negative ion pulsed at human frequencies, you know, in the DNA frequencies, actually more in the ELF frequencies that are good for the body, the beta, alpha, beta, delta, theta frequencies, BATD, if you want to remember it that way. And so what happened was, it made the whole experience much better. The only disadvantage of it was is that if you didn't have, which we didn't have in those days, one of our air filtration systems to go in the same room to absorb the dirt out of the air, you would get some pretty dirty walls pretty quick around the radiators because the electrostatic charge they produced was huge and the distribution was tremendous. Well, the dirt was in the walls and not your lungs. But today we would put one of our negative ionizers, our allergy-free systems that we have, that I have made over at Tatung. I actually designed these for Tatung, but we buy them back. We put that in there with your radiator. Then what happens is we don't have a problem of getting the walls dirty and getting an angry customer who claims we just ruined their furniture and their brand new paint job on their room. So that was kind of interesting. Now, as far as scalar waves go coming out of an irradiator, a scalar wave is made up of energy follows thought over a period of time. And anytime you have a thought process in your thought process, and you execute that thought into the third dimension, you have a fourth dimensional component, which is that of time. And so what happens is you create an event, an event horizon. And so, for example, if you wanted to start a company, you would design a product in your head, then you would go ahead and make this product, and you would go ahead and manufacture it and set it out on the street. People would buy it and sell it, and would create jobs to make it and conditions for the customer to enjoy it, whatever it be. Well, that would be an event of a complete event of a scalar wave, and that whole event is called a wave packet, a wave packet. And if, for example, let's say you were a religious person and you wanted to start a new religion. And you went out and got followers. You came up with some philosophical view of your understanding of God, and then you would go ahead and start preaching that, and you would have followers, and they would perpetuate it. That would create another type of wave packet. However, there will probably be a difference in the geometry and in the wave packet of the religion versus the geometry of the wave packet for the business. And this difference in geometry is part of what we call the bigger picture, the hologram. And when we get into projectors at a much later date, we'll talk about that. But right now, it's necessary to understand there is a geometry, a geometrical force here. And looking at it from a scientific electromagnetic side of it, you could almost say that this geometric force on the third dimension, this plane here, would be an absence of a force, because in effect it is an absence of force here, but it's a very animated force somewhere else. Whereas an electromagnetic or an ionic radiating wave, whether it be radioactive or transmitting radio frequency, would create a positive force on the third dimension. With the wave producing the positive force on the third dimension, the electromagnetic or ionized wave, you would have a pressure existing that would cause something to happen. You could use this pressure. You could measure it in current, in coulombs, joules. You could create an electric motor. You could create work. You could make a light a computer, make a light bulb go. You can create things from this pressure. When you use a scalar wave, you have an absence of pressure or a void. And this void then causes events to fall into it. And that's therefore we have the term event horizon, meaning that we have created a void of events, we have created a probability. And when we create a probability, then we have a cause. And when we have a cause, then we have an action. So by going from the event to the probability to the cause, we have created something that will eventually become an event, but it's an instantaneous creation, so there's no time involved in creating of the void or the scalar wave, but there is time involved on the positive side of it, the execution side of it. So time becomes an event from a scalar wave as a cause, but not as a scalar wave itself. And people don't understand how to separate these two, and I've seen in the New Age field and different scientific circles that try to study this stuff, they don't get it. One is a positive thing in one dimension, and one is a lack of it. and it's the reverse on the other side. So when you start realizing how to get into the doorway and create confusion between the void of the probability of a cause and an electromagnetic event, when you start putting those two together, you create a distortion of matter. So now you have what we call an antimatter distortion. And in the generator form, if you create a device, you end up with a weapon. And this is one of the theories that Nikola Tesla had discovered in his work. And he generated the scalar wave fields through Caduceus coils, which was a canceling of electromagnetic energy, which works, but it's a very crude way of doing it versus the way you're using shape energy. You know, canceled electromagnetic energy does produce shape, but you're limited in instead administration, you're limited by the coil effect. And winding a caduceus coil is a bear, number one. I've wound a few. And number two, they're limited by size. Number three, they don't have the ability to radiate out because they're actually canceling, and so you're kind of going by chance. And some of the, it does bring up a story though, I'll have to bring the story up. Some people ask me, well, why did we go from the aircraft, the, SR-71? CIA went from U-2s over to SR-71s. SR-71 flew about Mach 4. It had a front end temperature of about 5,000 degrees on the nose. And so the whole thing, which was several hundred feet long, expanded about 1 foot in flight, and it cost about, I don't know, several million dollars to fly this thing just once. And one day there was one flying over Russia. And, of course, the Russian version of the Tesla technology was called V-beam, victory beam, because when they configured the electromagnetic resonators, similar to what we had in the Philadelphia experiment, to fire these absence of energy pulses, it created a big, large antimatter beam. And an SR-71 was flying over Minsk, Russia, where a lot of their heart projects are today, and during the Cold War, and received a blast of energy from the V-beam, and it took off about 3 foot of the leading edge of one of the wings of SR-71, just disintegrated into nothing. And so at that point, when they landed the craft, it still could fly. It couldn't go full speed. It would have caught on fire, obviously, with exposed innards like that on the leading edge. It did get back to Langley, or actually Area 51. And when they realized the type of weaponry that Russia was now using, that they never flew another SR-71. That was the last one to ever go up because it was useless now to fly those things because they were going to be destroyed. And that was kind of like a warning shot anyway. They could have taken that thing out. So that's when the Aurora came to play, the big Aurora spacecraft, which I have seen. And there's a picture of one of those in my book in the description. We're not going to talk about Auroras, but I just thought I'd throw that little story in because I have had some direct experience with V-beam scalar wave weaponry, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the positive side of scalar waves and the use of scalar wave technology with the irradiator itself. And so we began to build these irradiators and teach people how to use them in a positive mode. And we found that there were different tight configurations possible. We found that the basic self-help system was something directed at the self, but what about helping, what about healing somebody far away, remote healing, like the Ruth Down machines and some of this radionic stuff that was built at the turn of the century and more recently. We knew that because we could transmit that type of energy, the radionics device could actually be used with one of our irradiators, but later on we found a way that we didn't even need one of those by clever programming in the Megorb base. And then we were then, of course, using lasers. We were pulsating lasers into the crystals in the bottom of the radiator, achieving another effect. And with a little bit of experimentation and playing around, you can actually do some amazing remote healing with these things. Now remember, once again, the body is healing itself, but now we're triggering a self-healing action to someone who needs that at some distance. Could be 1,000 miles or 50 feet or next door in the next room. It doesn't really matter. Of course, this is done by using witnesses and similars or pictures and samples of that person's body or their image, and correctly and very cleverly programming it. And this stuff's explained, of course, in my book, Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light. So that was the beginning of the technology. Of course, it went way, 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 way beyond that. When we got up to the configuration of 7 radiators, cleverly placed, in one of them is placed towards the north, and then divide a circle by 7, which gives you pi at every intersection, so you have 7 intersections of a circle, each one being 52 degrees with the angle of the pyramid, and you place an irradiator there in towards the center, and what you end up with is a big circle with 7 irradiators, all facing the center. And then, of course, when you go into the center and look at these all up to power supplies, you end up with a very powerful G-force generator that will allow you to do things like levitation, amazing dreams, transformation of elements, all kinds of things are possible using what we call a Systems 3 technology. And, of course, we place these out, and TM of America, a long time ago, was using this stuff to work with their levitation, their cities, as they call them. These things went all over the world for all kinds of applications. The Lockheed Skunk Works is another story later on, probably. They're doing some weather control even as we speak here at their little facility down in Houston, Texas. And so the stuff really got out there. If you look at the opening pages of my book, Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light, you'll actually see 4 radiators creating lightning bolts, and that happened right here in Laguna Beach. That's another story. So anyway, the radiator technology began to take off and get going in a nice way. So then we began to have some people with some very interesting experiences. The quad system became the most popular because when you use 4 of them in a room, you can make events happen. You can do weather control, you can do healing. It's fun to walk around the country with a crystal in your pocket because you carry what we call a transmitting crystal with you and make this irradiator perform different feats, which it's capable of doing. And it takes a little time to develop the feedback. You need something called a master crystal to go with it because that's like a battery. The master crystal, because it's Akashic records. Remember we spoke earlier of the Megor bases having pyramids in them, not pyramids, but crystals in them, 2 per unit. So with a quad system, you'd have 8. Say 2-pound points reporting to a master crystal, which is working off your consciousness, feeding scalar waves. We've got, we arrange these things in a kind of a square configuration. Like you put one in each corner of a room, for example. And usually when we use a quad system, we recommend that you dedicate a room for it, remove all furniture, and that's just kind of a necessity because the energy is going to be so great that any kind of synthetic materials or furniture objects in there that aren't related to the system are going to get in the way of the energy fields. And you're going to get such tremendous results when you use these things from your programming that you're going to actually want things out of there anyway. It's always fun to watch people program for objects because the objects come so fast and so furious that they don't know how to stop it. So it becomes more like a plague. And a real interesting story I'll tell about that. We had in Compton, California, we had a church up there And it was an African-American church, and they, of course, do a lot of dancing and emotional carrying on, which was really great because I used to attend some of their services. As a matter of fact, because I attended them, that's why they got to know me, and they ended up putting one of our star orbs, which we haven't talked about yet, but basically a star orb gets rid of negative energy connected to your refrigerator, and the food stays fresh. And a star orb is a pretty amazing device. And in the case of a congregation where you have a potpourri of different type of people hanging out, you're going to have negative people, positive people, people of all walks of life participating in this church. And so we put the star orb in there, and it blended the energy really well. Well, I got a phone call from one of the people that was attending the church and from Long Beach, and his name was Roy Kitchen, and he asked me to come down and wanted to know about other products. He'd read and heard about the quad system because one of his friends had one. So he asked me if I'd install one. And I said, yeah. And I said, ask Roy what he did. And he says, well, I'm 18 years on the Long Beach Police Department, and I'm in the bunco squad. I think it's fraudulent. I take care of it. You know, I stop it from being sold to the public. So I thought this will be real interesting, you know, selling basically a way out thing like a quad system manifests things to a police officer 18 years in the Long Beach Police Department who's got to be some kind of a skeptic. I guarantee you one thing, at least I'm right in the horse's mouth with this. If there's anything wrong or breaking the law here, I'll know about it. I won't have to wait. So anyway, I went over to his house, and in those days, this is back in the early 80s, I went over to Roy's house, and he was kind of a neat guy, and he said, look, you know, in those days, by the way, gold was $125 an ounce versus $500, so the system was about a quarter. It was, for those days, a $20,000 system cost $5,000, and he says, I'll give you cash. He says, if this thing works, I'm going to give you cash. He says, I'm going to give you $2,500 right now. You go build that system, and you come back here, and you put it in my house, and if it works, I'll give you the other $2,500. No questions asked. I said, that's fine with me. So I took his money, cash, by my dad. It was funny. Came back down here to Laguna, built a system, delivered it to him, set it up, and he got one of our more higher powered power supplies, a very, very powerful power supply. So we have different levels of power supplies. This was the really high. This was a Tesla, souped up Tesla, with about 50, 60,000 volts versus the little 7 or 8,000 volt when we sell as a self-help power supply. So I set the whole thing up. He had a room. I said, dedicated room. He did. He gave me a bare room. Nothing in it. Wooden floor. Absolutely perfect. So anyway, we got the system all set up, and I suggested that, in order to program it, I showed him how to lay down. He got a little master crystal with it, and I showed him how to write everything out in a little brown envelope. Actually, it was a pretty good size envelope that he happened to have there. And he did that, and I showed him how to put the crystal on. You put a crystal on your forehead, and you lay down next into the system is the best way to do it, because you're actually in it. You can feel it better. And so I set him up, and he said, I don't really care to know how the system works, because you really don't need to know how it works. I'm explaining it, you know, in this series here, how it works, but you really don't need to know that. And I think in his case, it was better that he didn't, because he was one of these kind of people that overthought everything anyway. I guess that's what the bunco squad has to do, the logic of why it's real or isn't. So anyway, I left him, I went away and left his house and figured, well, let's see what happens. So about 3 days later, I went back over to Long Beach there and see Roy, and I noticed there was quite a few envelopes, you know. And he'd buy now, and I also had told him that you don't want to share the program with anybody, and the fewer people that knew about the system, probably that would be good too. So I noticed there's about 20 envelopes in there, and that the curtains in that room, there was a bare room, and the curtains that were in the room had gotten pulled electrostatically into one of the radiators, which then shorts out the whole power supply to a degree. And I says, can't have that. You got to move this radiator or take the curtain down. So he had blinds on his window, so he just took the curtain down on that side of the room and left the blinds, the shades down, so nobody outside could see in. And he was okay, but I could tell he didn't want me back in 3 days. So then I went back about a week later. And the reason I went back then is because we make a vitamin product. Even then we were making it. I use lysine and arginine, which is very important to make vasopressin in the body. Vasopressin is a hormone that goes out from the brain, neurohormone that comes out to a pituitary gland, that when you do this kind of work, like wear a receptor, wear a pyramid, or do any of the things that you do with these products, when you do that sort of thing, it uses up vasopressin more than a person that doesn't do this kind of work. So lysine and arginine on an empty stomach in an enzyme solution that I have in my XL Plus vitamin formula, my Pyridine vitamin formula. So I took him a bottle of that, the earlier version of it. It's much more advanced today than it was then, but still it had those two components in it. So I took it over there, and he says, that was kind of an excuse, and I says, can I check the system? And he says, yeah. He says, you can check it if you want. So I went ahead and checked it, and there was 50. There was 50 envelopes in there now. And he was not that friendly, and I could see that his true nature, his true personality was probably coming out at this point. Left me the vitamins, and he pretty much was telling me, in vibes, don't bother him so much, because the deal was a month. Well, that was a week later now. First was 3 days, now a week. So I went away and left him alone. Well, about 3 weeks had gone by. We were getting close to the deadline, and I happened to be up in Long Beach. It's quite a drive from Laguna Beach, about an hour. So I went in there and knocked on Roy's door. This time I was like, well, I better be careful. You know, this guy does have an attitude. So he answered the door, and he'd look at me, and I just said, I haven't been in the neighborhood. It's almost, 4 weeks is almost over. I just want to make sure everything's cool. He says, just a minute. It's like, just a minute. And he went back in the house, left me outside. Couldn't see in the house because the shades were down in the room, the bedroom. He came back about, 3 minutes later. He had a little bag. He threw it at me. I just handed it to me. It had the rest of the money in it. And he said, go away. I'm happy now. Thank you very much. And slammed the door. I didn't even wait for me to respond. He just, hand me the money. Go away. I'm happy now. And slammed the door. And that was the last time I ever saw Roy Kitchen. So I thought, well, that's cool. At least I'm not being under attack from the Long Beach Bunko Squad Police Department here. I guess we've done something that's good, even though it's kind of a strange, way of being handled. Maybe I am kind of a pest. I don't know. But maybe anybody would under these conditions. So I went away and kind of like forgot about Roy. Well, basically, I didn't go back to Long Beach very often. And I guess 3 or 4 years went by, late 80s now. This was, I think, 84. And I went back, and I didn't go to Roy's house. I was downtown Long Beach one day. I was walking down the street, and then there was a uniformed police officer. Roy, of course, was an undercover kind of guy, but didn't wear a uniform. But this uniformed officer was walking down the street on Main Street in Long Beach, and I figured, well, he probably knew Roy Kitchen. And with that kind of a energy field, I think any cop would have known him if he worked anywhere near him. So I asked him, I said, oh, excuse me, sir, I had a friend of mine that was on the police department I haven't heard from in a number of years. His name was Roy Kitchen. And I said, do you know him? Or is he still around? And he says, everybody knew Roy Kitchen. Are you kidding? I says, well, what do you mean everybody knew? That's past tense. And he says, well, about a couple of years, no, about 3 years ago, Roy was been in the 18, 19 years. He says he retired. And I says, he did. And he says, yeah. He says, he made a lot of money in real estate. Huge amount of money in real estate, very successful. And he met this cute little blonde girl and decided he didn't need to work for the police department anymore, so he's retired now. I haven't seen him in several years. And I said, well, thank you very much, officer, for your information. I guess I won't be seeing Roy anymore. And he says, probably not. And that was the last I ever heard of him or mentioned him to anyone, but I thought that was a very interesting story about the irradiator, the early days of the quad system in the Long Beach Police Department, the Bunko Squad, and a cash payoff for the system. It's kind of like something out of a Twilight Zone story. But I had another incident that was pretty interesting, too. Also in Long Beach, I met, and I used to do seminars over there, went back when I had my Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy show on K-Fox Radio in Long Beach. That was also about 84, too, same time period. I'd sold a system to a guy that was a Douglas aircraft engineer, and he wanted to use it for real estate. And I said, okay, I mean, it's real estate, you can use it for anything. You know, it's funny, I was getting these material requests, but you get those along with everything else. And so he bought the system and set it up, and it was real interesting with that one because he was buying condominium units over in Phoenix, Arizona, and he lived in Long Beach. So he was investing his money, in other words, and he had just gotten into escrow with his paperwork. And I told him, I says, well, put the escrow papers in the system. And when you put the escrow papers in the system, I says, watch what happens to the deal. So he did. And I got a call back from him about 120 days later. He says, Dr. Fred, how are you doing? I said, fine. He says, how'd your purchase go on your condominiums? Because the guy spent, I don't know, this system was about $7,000. This guy spent some real money because he bought a nice master crystal and some extra lasers, a little bit more freer spender than the police guy was. So he says, I'm so happy for you and these systems. He says, I attended your seminar and I learned a little bit about them, but he says, I still don't quite know how they work, but they sure work fine. I says, what do you mean? He says, well, that was a 5-unit condominium over there. And this guy is all numbers now. So he says, I forget the number he gave me, but he says, you know, I had to put $10,000 down on that system, I mean, that condominium, and I gave you $12,000, you know. Remember, this is 80s now. Property was cheaper. And he said, I was out $22,000 here on a purchase I wasn't sure I was even going to get. Of course, I would have got my money back if it fell out of escrow. And he says, but it didn't. I says, well, what happened? He says, well, he says, I ended up renting out, I think it was 3 units, the first and last month, and the cleaning deposit paid back his system and good part of his down payment. So he said, even before his escrow was closing, I had commitments to all the money I'd put out and then some. And then when escrow closed, obviously I had all of the money because I rented out the 4th unit. And he said, the 5th unit I live in because I'm over there working part time. So I have a free place. A condominium that I covered my closing costs, my down payment, and my monthly costs of the payments are covered by the rents. And he says, I think your system had something to do with it. I'm not sure what, but it sure happened quick after I put the escrow papers in there. So I thought that was pretty cool. So those are just a couple stories, you know, and then there's the remote healing stories. And bottom line is the quad system is pretty effective. Now, when I use these systems, I always accentuate that you always... So when you start generating this much positive energy, you're going to start getting some negative energy, you know, purification and karma. And when you're talking about wave packets, you know, and events, scalar waves, you're dealing with karma, pure and simple. There is karma here. When you're dealing with the hologram and the projectors, you're outside the karma realm because you're dealing with the hologram itself. The hologram itself, there is no karma. It just is what it is. But most people in most situations, including the healing situations, are dealing with karma. And when you deal with karma, you have to deal with cause and effect because you're dealing with opposites. So when you're dealing with that, we've got a couple of other things that are necessary to understand. And one of them is that working with the new moon and the full moon. During the new moon, the programming is, that's when you do your programming for your systems with your crystal on your forehead and all the things that are necessary to do. You're writing up your programs and all that. But then when the moon goes full, the latter 2 weeks of the month, whether it starts first or last of the month, doesn't really matter, but the 2 weeks of the month is full, you do not program the system at all. You leave it alone. You forget about your programs, and you just let it do its thing because that's when the opposing forces are going to be working against you. And so because of that, you need to know how to work with a new moon, full moon. And so what happens is when you work with the new moon, you've got all the radiators pointing out, transmitting the energy away from you in 4 directions, the 4 corners of the universe. When you're coming into the new moon, the full moon rather, you've got to point the radiators in so all the negative energies are canceling each other. And of course you work with a star orb or what we call a devastar with system, which grounds out all of that energy, that cancellation force, that karmic force, and the electrodynamic force of it, and the EPC, electrical precursing forces, all of them, you know, they have to be directed into the ground. So that's what these are devices that are grounding devices that work with the systems. They're very, very important. Because if, and it also creates a springboard effect for when the new moon comes, it then bounces back out again, and then the master crystal that we use in the system acts as an amplifier for this rebounding effect. And by the way, master crystals are getting quite rare now because we get those from the Coleman mine, and we'll do a show on master crystals as we get up to a part of my life where I got involved with crystals. But right now, that's immaterial. So anyway, we came up with another device called an Omnion. Sumyasi gave me that in 1981. And what that does is that goes in the center of the system. And when the full moon, new moon cycles occur, the Omnion is a device that, being in the center of the quad system, allows you to leave the irradiators, two of them in and two of them out at all times. So therefore, we're not doing four all the way out. We're doing a configuration, two pointing in, two pointing out continuously. And this puts out a field that would look like a swastika. And realize a swastika is not something that came up in the Third Reich. It's something that came from the Lemurian days. And it represents transmitting energies across the universe in space and time in all four directions. And remember, when you're out in space, everything is, there's only one direction, and that is out. There's no top, bottom, or left, or right. And that, so that's the configuration the system likes to work in. Two in, two out, and the Omnion in the center. But a lot of people, they want to start out with a lower budget, so then they'll go with mechanically moving all the irradiators in for the full moon and facing them out for the new moon. So that's another configuration. The Omnion, I will also be posting that up on the website so you can see pictures of that. You'll see it on my website, which is www.pyridyne.com. And you look at the Omnions, and the Omnions come in all different intensity levels. When you look at them, you'll see gemstones in them from all over the world, because when you work with the quad systems and you have crystals and minerals laying around your house, you're going to probably gather all the mineral, all the quartz and all the onyx and the emeralds and all the things you've collected, and you're probably going to end up putting them in your system, because you're going to find that the natural gemstone energy and natural energy of minerals is highly amplified and channeled and directed into a purpose when you put it in a quad system, rather than having it laying on your shelf or on your table or on your windowsill or in your bathroom or your living room or on the floor or in your closet. You know, all these things come out because you'll take all of your gemstones, all of your minerals, that unless there's a 50-pound crystal somewhere, and you put them in your system, because you'll find that the crystals now come alive. System comes alive, you come alive, and you have a lot of fun. So it's kind of neat to be able to go into someone's home and collect all of the collectibles they've got askew everywhere and put them into a concerted effort to make them produce scalar waves that will actually serve some of their needs and some of their desires and wishes on top of it as a plus. Then, of course, we use the laser systems. The laser is a light amplification by stimulation, emission, and radiation. That's what laser stands for. And we have all different colors lasers. We use blue lasers. We use green lasers. We use five-color lasers, which puts out seven different colors of the spectrum. All different types of lasers that are integrated into these systems, too, which are a lot of fun. And the lasers really work with the astral body. If you, for example, focus a laser on a crystal for very long, you'll see that it will emanate into the astral plane, a very etheric energy field, like a blanket of energy will come. And it's very, very intriguing to see that. I'm sure you'll have lots of questions, and just continue to send me the emails to fredbell@pyridyne.com, and I'll answer them when I get a chance. So far, I've been able to somewhat keep up with them because I'm enjoying doing it. Sometimes I get a little busy, but I'm trying to keep up with all of the different things that are required to keep everybody satisfied. And I hope you got something this week out of the irradiator, because that was a chapter of my life, the irradiator. And it was something that came in 1978, as I said earlier, from the Pleiades. The Megorb, of course, followed, and the Omnion came in 1981. So these are things that we have lots and lots of fun with over. So I hope to be able to share this with you and have fun with you with these systems and network you with people that already are having fun with them. And once again, have a great weekend. We'll be talking soon, or at least maybe I'll be talking and you'll be listening. Who knows? Maybe you don't want to hear me anymore. I don't know. Who knows what everybody wants in these days? Everybody's always changing, but it's always for the fun of it.
You have been listening to a Blog In Broadcasting service, a service to others' endeavor. Thank you very much, and good night.